Hello, Dads. You have Jonathan back again with the Dad Corp podcast for this week's episode, brought to you by the Dad Corp. Check us out, www.thedadcorp.com. We have an e-commerce platform. It's a mall, everything dad. Pick up one of our Dad Life Collection shirts. They're going off the virtual shelves. It is a unique, original design made by the Dad Corp. It fits well. It looks great. Your kids are going to love it. Your family's going to love it, and your friends are going to ask where they can get it. So share the word, tell them, have them pick one up too. We hope you're all following us. We hope you all enjoy the shows, and we hope you love our products. We can't do this without you. We are growing this platform into the largest global platform made for dads, period. Now, for this week's show, we have two visitors. One is my childhood friend and partner, Dustin Boring. He's making a rare guest appearance, which is just exciting. It's nice to have him on the mic, in the mix, talking with our special guest and friend of mine, Kisan Patel. Kisan Patel is a serial entrepreneur who has a very impressive background. He's the M&A expert and CEO of DealRoom, M&A standing for mergers and acquisitions. Companies buying companies or becoming one company. You see it out there a lot. Kisan's been highlighted in Business Insider, Forbes, CEO World Magazine, Business.com, Investing.com. Additionally, Kisan has recently authored a book around mergers and acquisitions called Agile M&A, which is a modernization approach to traditional mergers and acquisitions, looking to close the deals faster and maximize the value. Great book. You can pick it up. It's out there on Amazon. Also, Kisan is a natural disruptor. He recently saw an opportunity with the coronavirus and your traditional corporate conferences that are held all over the country that are expensive for employees to get to. They take a lot of time, and they're really sometimes just inaccessible based on schedules, location, and just the overall cost. Kisan came in. He's now about to launch in June the M&A Virtual Summit, made by M&A Science. It is the first annual M&A summit online ever. So he's coming in, he's changing the game. He's going to bring in experts from all over the industry, and it's going to be an incredible experience. Finally, Kisan runs his own podcast. It's very successful, 14,000 listeners, called M&A Science. He brings in experts from all over the industry to talk about M&A and discuss the techniques and approaches that they find that work in different industries and scenarios. And last but not least, Kisan is a father of two. He's a husband. He's got a great family. His daughter makes a guest appearance for us. So we have a fantastic episode. Listen in. We hope you enjoy. Share it, spread the word, and take some great insights that Kisan shares about being a dad, being an entrepreneur, being a husband, and just managing the chaos of all of it. Can't wait for you to listen. Stay tuned. All right. Well, without further ado, let's get Kisan Patel out there. Kisan, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
All right, man. Well, thanks for joining us today. We are stoked to have you on here. What's been going on? Tell us about what you've been up to.
Well, we got a lot going on for everybody in the world right now. So I think it's been about creating, staying busy with any downtime, and staying active is the big thing.
There's this little thing called the coronavirus that's kind of made an impact out there. What are you guys doing to try to pass the time day to day?
Activities. Just trying to find stuff. Like yesterday, I took the kids out for a little jog around the block. They're hesitant about it too, because the park is closed and we live right next to the park. But I said, we got to get out. We just can't sit inside, play video games all day. So just in this nice weather, we had a great break of the weather. There's a lot of people out, but just getting them to do something.
Yeah. How many kids do you have?
I have three.
What ages?
So I have two boys that are 4 and 7. And then my oldest is my daughter, who's 9.
And so does everyone kind of understand what's happening with the coronavirus, or do they have different understandings? I mean, that's a little bit of a different age range.
Yeah, I think it sort of descends. You know, the oldest probably has a better sense. And the middle one kind of gets it. The youngest one thinks coronavirus is a song. And when we're taking him out jogging yesterday, he's like singing coronavirus, coronavirus. And I'm like, son, don't. You're going to freak people out. Like, people are already freaked out.
That is freaking funny.
Well, the young kids probably enjoy this stay at home. It's kind of like a stay at home vacation where the parents are around and you're much more active with taking them for walks and stuff. They're probably loving this.
Yeah, it's funny because they try to emphasize that, like, oh, like this is, we're realizing we don't really like school. I'm like, no.
How are your teaching skills? Are they getting better?
Mine are not that great. I'll be honest. I had a lot of ambitions to come in and really model a training program for them to resemble what they would learn in school, but amplify it with things I wanted them to learn. And it doesn't work well. It's really difficult to do that in your house because they're used to the environment and culture, and it just becomes like weekend time every day. So it's difficult. And it's, I think my wife's not like the very much like the A type to help drive it. So it is tough to do. So now I just treat them like little employees.
Yeah. When you guys are out running, are you wearing masks or have you still refrained from doing that yet?
No, we haven't done that. I don't know if that's like the real thing that's going to help.
Yeah. There's a lot of different, I guess, opinions on it. I just read the other day that CDC was recommending that you wear some type of cloth, but then, you know, there's all of this mixed data. It's funny. My mother actually sent me a care package about 5 years ago that probably predicted the coronavirus. We had rations and water that's in these kind of, you know, lifeless, like, you know, non-expirable packages. And then there was an N95 mask. And I was like, little did I know that I basically won the lottery with that 5-year gift a year ago. So I've been wearing my mask every once in a while.
Wow.
Dustin, your daughters are pretty far apart as well. Like, what are you all doing? I'm sure the teenager is having a lot more challenging time than the baby.
Yes. So I have a 14-year-old and then a year and a half old girl. So different dynamics, right? So the 14-year-old, she had 2 weeks off of school completely, and they incorporated her spring break into one of those. That way they didn't lose too much traction. But this past week, she actually started back to school online, which we didn't know kind of how that was going to work, but it's actually gone pretty well. It's not the same as having in-class instruction. And we realized how much the teachers probably do help her along each day when she's doing her assignments, because she just has question after question after question. And luckily, she's still at an age with kind of the complexity of her questions that we can still handle it. So we've been able to help out. The little one, though, that one's been a little tough because right now she's at the age where she is just go, go, go. And she wants to get into everything. And if you close the door, she wants to open it. If you put a toy away, she wants to dump the whole contents back out. So it's been tough to try to get enough free time between working remotely and trying to kind of balance out the life situation at home and try to keep her happy. I mean, it's a full-time job and it's just a huge transition from where we were a couple weeks ago. How about you with your daughter? Is you guys just doing everything at home, or is there some online programs you've been working with?
Yeah, so Milan is about Kisan's youngest child's age. She's turning 6, and you know, it's funny, she's the same way. We have the online school going on, but you know, she hasn't sang a Corona song, but every time she watches a movie and sees anybody break social distancing rules, she's asking if they are aware that the coronavirus is out there and why are they getting so close to each other. So it's kind of comical to watch. But so Kisan, no pressure today. You're gonna have to give us all tips and advice on how to also make it through the coronavirus. I don't think I added that question to the original list. Okay. But
I'm still figuring that out. So maybe we'll come up with a game plan by the time this is over.
I like it. So, hey, you know, we have a couple formats here today. I want to walk you through. So let's get into it. I'm sure there's a lot of things that you have going on. But for the first part of the format, we got a little bit of a rapid fire to just get the brainwaves going, get yourself loosened up. Don't want you to pull a hamstring through the interview. And then we'll really jump into the meat and potatoes and get down in depth on some of your philosophies, principles, and kind of key views on fatherhood, parenting, balancing entrepreneurial activities, and everything else you're going on with being an epic dad and really living the family life. Does that sound like a fair way to kick this thing off and go through the format?
Sure, let's do it.
Awesome. So let's start out with our rapid fire questions. We have a few of them here for you. There's some doozies, so hang with us. We'll throw a little softball at the start, though. Which was scarier, starting a business or having a child, and why?
That's a good question. Probably having a child, because there was so much unknowns to it and what to expect and very little direction. Whereas a business, my father was an entrepreneur. He ran small like motels, and I grew up around that business. So there was some of that exposure already there and sort of sense of what how much work it entails and being part of that culture growing up. So probably like a little bit more of the expectation into what to get into when starting a business versus becoming a parent. So it's harder to have the first child.
You know what I love about that answer is that you went to your father for advice on how to start a business, but not on advice on how to have a baby.
You know, I actually did. And this was funny because I asked my dad, and this is part of the Indian culture. You get a lot of pressure to get married. And then after you get married, it's almost like all these little hints to when you're going to have kids. So there's pressure there for that. And then, you know, I get to this point and I have my first kid. I'm asking my dad, I said, Dad, what's up with all this pressure to like get married and have kids? And he told me, he said, I wanted to watch you suffer the same way I did. That was the parenting advice I got from my dad. And I was like, okay, that's not the most helpful thing, but we'll work with it.
Well, better than nothing. That's hilarious. Yeah. All right. So jumping into the next one, favorite superhero?
Batman.
Are there multiple superheroes in your house running around, or do you all have a unanimous decision on Batman?
We have Batman, Superman, Spider-Man are the top ones, and Hulk all exist, but I don't know what it is. My littlest one really got me into Batman lately. And yeah, I was close to doing Batman for Halloween last year and getting like the full on, as close as you can get to the realistic one. But
Keyson, have you been able to jump into like the Avenger movies and that kind of stuff? Or is that still a little bit too far out for your kids?
I'm like a, what's the word? Not like proactive parent. You know, I do like let them watch everything, both Marvel and Avengers. So they've seen them both.
Nice.
Batman's awesome because he's kind of real, right? Like he turns into Bruce Wayne during the day. And so you can kind of relate to him where Superman, somebody from a whole different planet. You know, what draws you to Batman yourself? Are there any type of similarities you look at or parallels that you think about with Batman?
He's got a lot of cool gear, tech, and he's rich. Like, what else do you want?
Yeah, that is kind of the American dream, right?
Yeah, rich would have a lot of toys.
Right now, I think it's just have an N95 mask and be able to go outside again. But once that goes through, maybe it'll be being rich and having toys again.
Yeah, that's true.
So what's your favorite family's tradition that you all have as a go-to?
You know, I think it's becoming the new thing. I don't know when we're going to do it again so soon, but I remember one time I was on a vacation. I saw this family and they were just the most connected family I've ever seen. And I started talking to the mom, like, what, there's something different about you guys. And she was basically, I realized like they all had a sport they played together. So that's been my thing I've been driving is what's this family sport that we could all play together. They had baseball, softball, and I don't have a lot of softball fans in my household, but we've all picked up ice skating. So that's become like the family tradition where pretty much every weekend we'd go out ice skating.
No kidding. Now, was that a sport or an activity that you all started learning right from the beginning? So all at level zero or had you all done it?
That nobody in our family ice skated prior at all. You know, maybe with my wife, maybe on a date at some point before we got married, we'd both like try it to just to fall over. But that was it. Like nobody had a background in ice skating.
And who is picking it up the best so far in the family?
It's interesting. I definitely would say the two older kids are. You know, my daughter picked it up really fast. And then I didn't think the middle one would. I thought he's really hesitant to have somebody teach him. And he kept falling, but he just kept making his falls and he got good at it. And he's fast.
Are you guys taking lessons or are you just learning by YouTube videos and then going out and falling a lot?
A mix of falling. I did have a private instructor for a little bit, but you know, once you get past the fundamentals, I think the kids can even learn faster on their own or watching some videos and things like that. So
ice skating is a hard activity. I tell you, I don't know if you've thought about the lessons. I put my daughter in some lessons up here and it's no joke. You know, first of all, the parents that are in ice skating, they're serious. They are coming in to have their next, you know, child be an Olympian. And so they take it very seriously. They'll run you over if you're not able to, you know, pick up the speed. And then, you know, afterwards at the rink that my daughter was at, they allowed you to do like a parent kid skating for about a half an hour. And we were doing it. And one time I tripped and I was holding Milan's hand and we both kind of went up and I tried to stop her from falling. But in the course of it, I think I was literally at one point parallel to the ground. And I watched my daughter in slow motion do the same thing. So we're kind of like stopping and freezing time, talk about superhero for a second. Like my whole like image of us being both parallel to the ground, I just saw her face plant, bloody nose, like crying, you know, I'm dad of the year. I just got up. I can't, you know, I try to get up, I fall again. And so that was probably kind of the extent of our ice skating experience. And so from there, we've kind of moved on to like less impactful sports that take a little coordination and skill.
Well, a couple of tips on that is, wear those like volleyball knee pads underneath your pants. You know, I still do wear those things and they'll save you definitely.
But I think more than a knee pad, I think we needed face masks and like, you know, we needed some of that like SWAT gear because the way we were up in the air and fell, I tell you what, I had bruises on my body for like the next 2 days.
So my daughter does hockey and I'm convinced hockey for kids is safer than figure skating. Because I see those kids go in the air with no pads on or anything and they're in the air. And those is a hard fall to take versus when you're hockey, I mean, you're covered up in pads. So even I'll get out there and do like stick and puck with her. And I have more fun because I'm more open to trying more aggressive things I wouldn't normally try without all that padding on.
Yeah, that hockey is a serious sport too. I mean, hockey parents are no joke either, right? Like they take that.
Most infamous.
They're all in. They're all in. They scare me. So going on to the next question, though, tell me about the most embarrassing parenting story that you've had.
I got one. It's probably not the most embarrassing. It's embarrassing and colorful. So it was with my daughter. And and I was actually telling her this not too long ago. She was maybe 2 years old or just approaching two. And she's sitting there, we're watching couch. I don't remember where my wife was. I think she was out of town. So I had her to myself for a bit of time. And she's like looking at me and she's like, I want dark milk. I want dark milk. And I'm like, what? What the heck is dark milk? What are you talking about? So I go to the fridge and like, let me see what I can find. I open up and staring at me was chocolate milk. I was like, dark milk. So I put this milk in a sippy cup and I go sit down and we're hanging out. And I go to hand it to her and like, the bottle just falls down. I'm holding the lid and up comes splash all this chocolate milk on both of us. And I'm like, shit. And she looks at me and just added as natural as possible, looks right into my eyes and says, shit. And I look at her and I just like, what do you do? I'm trying not to get an acknowledgement. That's not a good word to say. So I'm just kind of like looking around and just, you know, hoping she'd forget about it and just kept going on with things. And then I didn't think anything of it because, you know, it's kind of funny too, with the kids that age, you sit down with them and spend a lot of time with picture books and really try to get them to learn different words. And I'm just kind of like boggled in the back of my head. The fact that, you know, we're just doing over a grasshopper and ant and we keep going back and forth. And like after the 50th time, she's still not getting grasshopper right. But yeah. You know, I accidentally say one word and you pick it up right away. So a month goes by and my wife comes to me and she's like, something really strange happened today. I was like, what's up? Well, I was in the kitchen cooking and, you know, Shiloh's out playing and she was trying to open this jar and she couldn't open it. And she said, shit, like she knew how to use the word.
So she not only learned the word, she learned the context at the same time. So that was, she's a fast one.
Yeah, so that was a story with my daughter, what her first swear word was.
Did she stick with it or did she end up dropping it?
Yeah, it was like I think the boys are a little different. They kind of stick to their swear words and it becomes very programmatic. I think it wasn't something she really retained that I know of, unless she was just using it. But when we weren't around, it knew better to say it in front of mom and dad.
Oh, man. So here's the key question on that. Did you blame the wife and say, I have no idea why she would have known that word? Or did you finally fess up and tell her how she would have actually known to use
She that knew. Word? That's the thing. Women have that. They somehow give you like this look to kind of like see how you facially respond without even you consciously thinking about how you're responding. And they know right away.
They've got a sense, man. They will sniff it out even if you try to hide it. I don't think, one, we're great at hiding things in the first place, but they got this sense. They know when their kid does something, where that came from pretty quickly.
Exactly. Yeah,
it makes you realize when you're growing up, all the things you thought you were getting away with your parents, that they knew everything.
Yeah, we've had a few of those moments, Dustin, I'm sure.
A few.
All right. So, Keyson, next one, best memory of being a dad.
Best memory of being a dad. Let's see. What's the best memory of being a dad? Yeah, I don't know. The family trips were always fun. I think it's always like those little achievements that you make with the kids are always the best, though. Like when you finally get them to start walking, and just those little milestones when they're trying to do something and they've been going on and they haven't hit that achievement until you keep sticking around with them and encouraging them and see them finally getting it. So even like when they're playing sports or I got the two older ones in piano and they're starting to like get good at it. I think that's kind of been probably the best moments. And then to the stuff that you can do activities with, you know, we have jogging, we do skating, just things like that. That's really like good highlights. I really enjoy that.
Yeah. There's so many of them, right? Like you have these different moments and my daughter's always asking me, like, you tell her stories. And it's interesting because it always is difficult for me to come up with one because I have so many that go through my head. And thank goodness for pictures now. So we, you know, have 10,000 pictures in my phone. So each time we look at a picture, I can tell her the story from that. But it's one of those things. It's really hard to just pick one memory, right?
Yeah. I had one was like, my daughter had a really tough situation to deal with. And I was surprised by it because I think she was only seven. You know, around 7 years old, and she came to me and said, "Dad, this girl's bullying me in school." And I was taken off guard because I'm like, "You're only seven. Like, I thought bullies don't come till later when you're a teenager." And so, I could tell just sort of the way she was motioning, she wanted some advice on how to deal with it. And she particularly came to me. She didn't go to mom about it. So, you know, the first things you start thinking about, it's like, "All right, let me kind of teach you how to fight, throw down and stuff." But I was like, wait a minute, that's not. You know, this kids are only seven and plus they shouldn't be doing that to begin with. I said, okay, let's break this down. Why is she bullying you? And she told me it's because the girl said her hair was ugly. She told me my hair was ugly and pushed me. I said, okay, why does she think your hair is ugly? She's like, I don't know, Dad. She just thinks my hair is ugly. And I said, well, I don't think it's your hair. Your hair looks fine to me. I don't think it's your hair. That's why this person is giving you a hard time. You know, it could be anything. Like, I really don't know. She could have some personal things, maybe some family, maybe there's something else, you know, this and that. And she kind of started thinking like, oh, you know, she might be jealous because I'm, you know, have all these other little friends and stuff. And I think she's more like the loner. I'm like, okay. Why don't you go talk to her? Why don't you go talk to her and really try to understand, get inside her head and get a sense of like what she's thinking, what she's feeling, and just really try to understand. Just do that. Try to empathize. And that's kind of the what I was trying to get at with her is try to make her feel felt, like really understand that person and make them know that you understand them. And then I come home the next day and she comes running up to me, Daddy, guess what? And I'm like, what? And she said, you know, we're best friends now. So it kind of squashed that whole little thing and sort of sent it in a different direction. But I think that was like a good moment where you can really spend down and spend the time to teach him a life lesson on how to overcome something like that. That's probably one of the most memorable ones I had.
Yeah, and probably much more sustainable and long-termly effective than throwing a right cross, right?
That was a backup. Let me show you a takedown move just in case that doesn't work.
There's always the escalation chain, right? Like you have to be prepared just in case.
Yep.
That's funny. So thanks for being a sport with me on the questions. I know Dustin has a few. Dustin, do you want to kick off your questions and keep the podcast rolling?
Sure. So the next question we had, you may have already touched on it, but if you have a different answer, we can discuss it. So what's your favorite thing to do with your kids? Is it ice skating or maybe that's just the activity that you guys do with the family?
Yeah. You know, that's still one of the favorite ones because even if my wife's not up for it, we'll all go out or maybe I'll just take one or two of them out. I would add in there the trampoline parks that are popping up. They're closest to where we live, but when we do get a chance, going to those things is a ton of fun and it's a good activity to do with them.
Do you watch or you participate?
I participate. Yeah, I call it sideline parenting. I try to avoid that. You know, you got to take it as an opportunity to relive some of this youth that you had at that age. So sit down.
How many other parents do you see just sitting there on their phone on the sideline?
You know, I think it depends. I don't want to stereotype it. I say sometimes I think it's a little bit the older parents that may be more so like the, you know, I remember one time where I was playing soccer with the kids and I saw one boy playing by himself and I invited him to join us. And I was kind of wondering, I was like, where's your parents at? Why are you? He's like, oh, my mom's over there in the car because it was a little chilly out. It was like fall weather. And she, you know, she was nice. She came later and was like, hey, thank you for playing with my son and blah, blah, blah. But that's like, you know, a little bit of being a sideline parent. It doesn't take much effort. And part of it's just like reliving it. Like I was a terrible soccer player as a kid. So I have fun playing with them and trying to relearn it and get better at it. And at least you got some sense of pride when you can beat your 4-year-old in soccer.
Yeah, there you go. Relive your non-glory days, right?
Yeah. You know, I would add one more is one of my favorite activities. We live in the Midwest in Chicago, and so it's not far to get over to Michigan, Indiana, but they had all these little apple picking farms, but they all have like blueberry, raspberry, all these different little fruits to pick. That is a lot of fun. I never realized how much fun that actually is. And it's one of these events you can do where you don't really have to watch your kids as much as you do for other things. You can sort of find your little zen and let them do their thing, and they have a lot of fun and you end up with some healthy fruits afterwards.
Nice. That's a nice healthy activity too there.
Yeah. I don't know what the connection is, but they're actually more inclined to eat the stuff they pick.
I can understand that. At least it's a little bit more meaningful than just asking you to grab something from the store.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll roll to the next question. What is the number one piece of advice that you would give to a dad who's about to have their first child?
Oh, okay. So first child, it's important too, because when you get a kid, they don't come with an instruction book. You know, the hospital doesn't say, hey, by the way, here's a dad handbook for you.
Yeah, there's plenty of books out there that you can grab, but it's still not going to prep you for it.
Yeah, you know, and for me, you're right. I mean, there is. For me, the biggest challenge that I wasn't prepared for is the escalation of emotions that happen, because you have these really, really tough moments with kids, especially that early age. And, you know, obviously the first weeks you're kind of up late and dealing with the whole sleep schedule stuff. But that's pretty prepared and part of it. And you know about that. But then the kids hit their like peak of cuteness around 6 months and they're super adorable. But then they start teething after that around 7-8 months. And you got a kid that's just screaming his head off all day. And you know what I mean? It sort of drives your emotions up. And then it even gets difficult too when they're around two, because they're not a baby anymore. They're not really this toddler. They're sort of like this giant mutant baby and you can't reason with them. And it's really, really difficult. And you're going to hit this spike in your head that just, you know, I can see why people like physically lose it. I think finding and thinking about ways to like prepare for that ahead of time. So I there's a funny thing. I know my wife makes fun of me. I do this gift box for new dads. And because it's the big point she makes fun of me is because there's nothing in there for the baby. I'm like, of course, everybody gets stuff for the baby. Like this is for the dad. And I put a book in there. And they might change the language. It was originally called like Calm the Fuck Down. I think they still have it on Amazon, but they probably changed the title a little bit. Yeah, they got a little couple symbols in there. So I still get that book because I do know, and that's just walks you through like, here's this kind of situation, the kid, and it's like, calm down, and this is how you deal with it. So that's a good one. And then it's good too, because then the wife of the person I'm gifting it to looks at it and gets it and appreciates it. And then I put in this kava. I guess you get some kava candy on Amazon. And kava is like a South American plant that functions as a natural anti-anxiety. So I remember I used to take that one. Whenever you're stressed out or angry, it'll take you down to zero. So that was like a fun little thing to put in there. But the thing I really value the most was gun range earmuffs. And I always put a set of gun range earmuffs in this gift box. So when you do have those moments with a screaming kid that's just screaming on top of their lungs, you simply put these earmuffs on. It reduces that decibel volume by 30, 40. And I know you could get some headsets. Everybody has their noise-canceling headsets, and you can go jam out and stuff like that. But I think that sends a wrong message. That sort of sends like, I'm just going to ignore you. I'm going to put this headset on and this. I think this sort of signals like, look, I'm putting this on because you're screaming and I want to save my eardrums. But then too, it really calms you down. It'll really bring you down. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, you're upset. Let's talk about it. Why are you hungry? What are you upset? Because I it's time to go to bed. That's so it just brings you down so that you're sort of in a much better state and you're not like at this peak of mental explosion.
That's a tough point, right? You go through this period of time where, you know, I think as a father, you know, we're generally trying to fix something that's broken. And anytime we hear a child crying, you know, our mind, I think, naturally goes to something's broken, fix it. And sometimes it's not fixable. You just need to let it go through the phase. And so that sounds like a great tool to have on your head and being able to just survive that moment and just calm down. I think the other thing that they should probably be teaching all of us before we go into that is breathing techniques. One of the things I always used to find was that the less I breathed while those situations were happening, the more angry or the more kind of stressed that I got. And sometimes you just need to take a couple of deep breaths and just calm yourself down because it does kind of escalate quickly in your head.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I think we're obviously speaking of non-colicky babies, but for the first couple of months, they're crying because they need one of their basic needs fit, their basic needs met. So it's they need fed or diaper needs changed or something. It's only a couple of things. But yeah, as you get into like the 6, 9, 12 months, they just have a much more wide variety of kind of what's bothering them and they can't communicate that. So it really takes sometimes a village to try to keep your sanity and kind of work through it. My wife and I think we've done a pretty good job of kind of passing off the kid whenever you're starting to kind of get to that point where you're starting to kind of meet your max stress level and where you can kind of reset. And so we've tried to do a good job of trying to keep that balance going because you're not always going to be able to stay ahead of it and it's always going to continue to happen. So, but that gift box that you were giving out, do you still give them out to new dads?
Yeah, absolutely.
Contents haven't changed over the years. You've kept it pretty consistent.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, I should probably sit down and think of some other things that could be in there, which may change as these kids get older. But yeah, I mean, those earmuffs are probably the most valuable. I remember having three of those in my house with raising three kids. So I could find one anywhere, any room I was in.
That's awesome.
Hey, Keyson, I think you just gave us an idea of our next product that we need and category that we need to have out on our website or for our dad mall.
You should 100% do that. I'll buy that from my gift box. Actually, you should just put the gift box together and then it'd make a lot easier for me. So I don't even put the two together.
Dustin, you have a little bit more space in our inventory down your basement.
We'll try to squeeze it in somewhere.
A new dad gift box. I would promote it for you. That would be great. I think that's definitely a good item, good giftable item that'll appear to a broad market.
We'll be reaching out once we make it happen.
There you go.
We might have to put credit to you, Keyson, with everyone that gets sold.
Yeah, I wish you had like a simple name like Joe or Bob so you can put like, you know, Joe's gift box or Bob's gift box. A Keyson would be weird.
All right, we'll move on to the next question. As we already hit you with your most embarrassing parenting moment, so what is your proudest dad moment?
Boy, it kind of circles back to the hitting those level of achievements with the kids or helping them overcome a challenge. You know, I have this rule with my kids. My daughter's on it. She's really on point with this, but the way we use the word thank you and sorry, and what I explained to her is that they're very transactional words that alone don't have much meaning because we use them transactionally. You go to the store, you buy a snack and you pay for it and you're like, thank you. And it's very transactional. What I was explaining to her is like, you got to create the meaning with it when you use it. So if you say thank you for what? Like, explain why you're thankful. So thank you for the great service. Thank you for being so fast. Thank you for getting this to me on time. And I think too, at the same time, it's something that I sort of wanted to get better at personally myself, because even in the work environment, sometimes we ask people to do things or ask for help for things, but then we don't really do a good job of articulating why we're asking for help. And that's such an important thing I've learned is you got to make sure you clarify that why, and it just makes such a difference. You'll see people are more open to responding better and following through when you add that clarification in terms of why you're asking for that help, and they have a better understanding of it. So similar, where if you're using the word thank you, clarify it, like why. And same thing with sorry. If you bump into somebody, sorry I bumped into you. So we're at a restaurant. I have one of my industry friends. She always gives me these nice restaurants to recommend. And then I'll come home Friday evening and our wife's like, I'm staying home. I don't want to go out. My daughter's like, I want to go out. So we always do little daddy-daughter date nights, and they're fun. And I remember going to one restaurant, and it was a little bit of a fancier restaurant, and it was a nice place. And we get in there, and she's asking me, she's like, Daddy, how come all the women sit on this side of the restaurant, on this side of the table? And you know, it's kind of like how you probably, gentlemen, have gone to a date with your wife, and it's kind of like the default where they take the bench in the back. And, you know, you kind of have that little wood chair that you have to sit on and lean over.
Never done that. I don't know what you're talking about.
You just rush in to grab the booth in the back or the...
I never find the first place to sit down ever. I'm always the first person standing.
Well, so she's asking me, and, you know, hey, why don't the women sit on this side of the restaurant on the table? And I wasn't sure. I was like, you know, I think it's so they have more room to put their stuff. But I really don't know. You should ask our server. He might have a better response. And our server comes by. I think his name was Andy. And she's asking him, you know, like, hey, a question. Oh, and she's like, oh, what's your question? And she's like, why do the women all sit on this side? And he explained, like, it's an old folk tradition where women wanted to be more on display. So that's why when they sat on that side of the restaurant, they had more visibility to all the other patrons that were visiting and dining in. And I thought that was really cool. You see, I didn't know that. And then it was funny because when we went to get the check, you know, she gets a check and she's like, hey, Andy, thank you so much for the great service and the recommendations. And the lady at the table next door just does a head turn whiplash and was like, you're the best father ever. How did you get her to, you know, how do you get your kids to do that? And she just started talking about her son. And, you know, it's like, I have a tough time getting him to do anything and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of funny, but that was like a little bit of that proud moment that, you know, hey, there's little things you kind of teach them, but the key was teaching them, explaining them why that they need to sort of do things a certain way. So that thank you example, like why you need to articulate and explain why, but you can tell it just made that response and the difference. I think she understood that from that point.
And Keyson, that was something that you mentioned to me in our conversations before. And I've found that just kind of one of the key advice, you know, cornerstone of any type of, you know, advice you can give to your kids and to last through their life. I just think that's such a genius point and something that, you know, we should definitely highlight after the show, Dustin, because, you know, you're essentially creating not only a logic of and an explanation ability of why they're thankful or why they're sorry or you know, you're welcome, but they're creating a way to be able to communicate, to make a point. And that goes through your whole life, right? There's so many different debate models out there. The one that I've spent a lot of time studying is called the Tolman method. And that's just a method of reasoning that was created. And it creates this like logical step-by-step breakdown that starts out with your point and then all the support behind it. But, you know, it's so easy, and especially in corporate America, for us to just get, you know, quickly focused on whatever the day's fire drill is, and we just forget to actually communicate the reasoning and the content. And then you hear in every single study afterwards of why employees are disengaged or employees aren't bought into the vision. It's because they don't understand why they're doing things. And so being able to instill that in your kids early is just such a powerful technique. And so I just applaud you for that. When you told me that's what you focused on, you know, we've been actually trying to do that more in our house, and, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I think that's something that we should definitely be highlighting as one of the main fundamental lessons that comes out of this podcast.
Yeah, that was an awesome, I think, teaching lesson that you shared with us. And I know personally, I'm going to take that as I work with our little one as she gets older, because just with my thought process, it's been to, I'm going to make sure that she says please and thank you, just kind of hitting the manners aspect. But I hadn't really thought about it being more transactional than actually meaningful. So that's absolutely something I'm going to use. Keystone, has that been effective for all of your kids?
The four-year-old's in his own world. You know, our four-year-old was a surprise baby, and that kid is the most interesting person I've ever met in my life, to be honest. I can remember, you know, obviously he matures quick because he has two older siblings, but, you know, 1 year old, he'd walk in our bedroom at night and be like, "Mommy, Daddy, I love you, good night," and walk out. And me and my wife would just look at each other like, what the hell just happened? What planet is this kid from? So he's different. You know, it's hard to kind of, he's really set in his ways. He's on autopilot and he kind of learns and does what he wants. But he's getting there. He's getting there. The middle one's good. He's following along his sister and really following along that sort of track with her. And I think he's kind of looks up to her and is sort of even learns from her behavior as well. So it's not so much after reinforce it with him as directly.
Awesome. We'll move on to the next question we had. So you've been a extremely successful entrepreneur. Is that something that you envision that you're going to kind of push with your kids, that for them to try to go down that route? Or would you maybe push them into more of a traditional working environment? Have you put any thoughts into kind of what that, I guess, growth and kind of leadership is going to be?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I grew up in a household that was very business oriented, and I literally grew up in a motel and saw it every day. But my dad didn't want me to go down that track. He always pushed me away and wanted me to go to college, become an engineer or doctor or something of that sort. But I was really interested in business, what I wanted to do. And it was kind of frustrating. It was frustrating, I remember, in my teenage years, because I wanted to learn more. I wanted to get more hands-on, and then push it away. But with my kids, it started with my daughter. I think she was about 7. And she said, came to me, it's like, "Dad, I want to do a lemonade stand." I think she probably saw one somewhere and said, "I want to do a lemonade stand." At first, I just was trying to find a reason, a way to convince her out of it. I was like, "I don't know, you really want to do that." And after a while, I started getting into it. I was like, you know, this isn't bad. You know, it's kind of something fun for us to do together. So we go down to kind of like, well, if we're going to do this, you know, we're going to do it right. You know, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you picked the wrong dad to like do a lemonade stand with. Like, we're not going to half-ass any of this. We went through 7 different sugars just to figure out like what's the best sugar to use to make our lemonade. And we'd buy all the lemons in bulk at Costco and do actual fresh squeeze lemon, like no shortcuts at all. And then, you know, she set up her little lemonade stand, and we live 4 blocks west of Wrigley. So we have a really nice street to actually do that on. And I really enjoyed teaching her the business fundamentals, because it's like, okay, I want you to understand that. And what I did was I basically gave her a loan and said, "You got to pay me back. Like, I'm going to give you this money. You know, whatever it was, like $100, $200 to start it. And we're going to buy this stuff." And it gave her a little debit card too, so she can sort of track this stuff better. And then when you're going through, like, okay, this is how much you're paying for lemons. This is how much you're paying. And she wanted to sell like bags of chips. I'm like, okay, well, let's think about how much money you're going to make on that. Because what's your net cost? And then how much you're going to sell for? Okay, do you understand your margins? Do you understand how much money you're making? You know, and then it's funny because our neighbor, he's also one of the business guys, and he's asking, giving her a hard time, asking her, like, "Do you know what your cost of goods are?" She's like looking up at me like, "All right, we'll have to have a talk about that." So I really had a lot of fun and they learned so much. They learned the people skills with interacting with different types of people as customers. And she had a lot of fun. She was getting into it. The business actually turned out to do better than we expected it to do, because my wife, I just like, "I need your help to like make the lemonade, because we're selling this so fast." But it was a lot of fun. So I think there's a lot of value for any kid just to learn some of that early on. So I'm definitely pro on the side of like pushing them towards it. Not necessarily like your career is going to be this, but I think, you know, at least kind of getting them exposure early so they can start thinking that way. And I think you'll start seeing if they do have like a knack for it pretty early too.
Yeah,
and which
go ahead, Jonathan.
Which one of them, Keyson, would be most likely to take on the reins of the deal room and M&A science afterwards?
Daughter, for sure. Yep.
Keyson, you had mentioned that your dad tried steering you away from business. Do you think that was due to just the amount of time that he kind of got absorbed with his job, or what do you think that thought process was?
I don't think it's the time. I think it was more around maybe culture, that he came and got educated in like a med tech type of degree. And he probably wanted to steer me more towards that type of career. I don't know. You know, and our family is very entrepreneurial. A lot of family members have businesses, but that was kind of his thing. Maybe that, hey, regardless if you do business, you should have some kind of education background in something.
Yeah, those lemonade stands or any type of small little activity that teaches them how to buy things, the supply, making stuff, dealing with customer service, even though that they're just having fun, I think is just so valuable. We've went through this process a couple of times with Milan, especially with her toys. And so, we're trying to teach her that you just don't throw things out, right? In New York City, with every space being limited, one thing in, one thing out. And so we're trying to get her to think about those are resources now you have and assets, maybe that is not valuable to you anymore, but who else would it be valuable to? And so she's getting in that mentality. And recently, we started to find somebody to do caricatures. And so, Keyson, we're making a caricature of one of your profile pictures that we'll give you as one of our gifts for being a guest here. You can see the one I put up on my LinkedIn profile. So we've got somebody to start doing those. And so Milan was looking at the caricatures and she's like, you should put, the kids on coffee mugs or, the family and get the person to make them and you can sell those things on shirts and everything. And she's been asking me if I thought about the idea and I'm explaining to her the process. Well, we got to figure out like how much we can get them made for, what can we sell them for? Is there a demand? And it's kind of fun teaching your kid those kind of processes around business that, hopefully their skills that later down the road, whenever they get in front of like a real corporate atmosphere, that it's something that becomes natural to them, or at least they've seen before. And so it's not a surprise or a new learning.
Yeah. And that's not something that they're going to get in their traditional education, right? Like, I think that's always been a gap in the U.S. education is that people don't come out of school understanding finances, let alone understanding how to possibly run a business and look at your income and your margins and everything. So I think if your kids might have that potential, I think it's awesome to try to teach them whatever you can in real life situations when they're young.
There's a lot to be said about that. There's a lot of things that school doesn't teach them. So you guys heard of like Ray Dalio's Principles book he published a year or two ago?
I have not.
It's a good one. You should get. The thing is for us and where we're at in our time and career, it's things that we've learned the hard way or learned from experience that he covers. And it's a good model because it's taking the idea of like trading principles, applying it to life and thinking through like what are life principles to be able to like reference and make better decisions going forward. So I personally use it if I ever have to like mentor or do a little time coaching somebody young that's still in college or real like right out of undergrad. That's like, I think a really good sweet spot for it. But I actually read it with my daughter when she was 8 and a lot of it's over her head. But what it was interesting is it brought up really good discussions around some of these life lessons that school doesn't teach. Examples like talking about open-minded versus closed-minded and to really define that and to understand it to a point that you know how to approach closed-minded people and so forth and how to even push yourself to be more open-minded. So that's like a good principle to have and it applies for us professionally. But to actually have that explanation with her at that age, it's interesting to get them to start thinking about that, even at that level, like what's the difference between open-minded and closed-minded? And then they start rethinking things a little bit. And then it's kind of funny because she'll attack me with it later. It's like, Dad, you're not being very open-minded. It's like, it kind of comes back over what you asked for. But it is kind of fun to sort of read through it, like, hey, do you understand? Let me explain it. And they had some really interesting things like how the brain works, how our personalities are, kind of getting them to understand that we're so physically unique and different when we can see each other, but to get them to think that our brains and the way we think is just as unique. We don't see it, but it's like the way we literally are wired and think is just as unique as we are physically unique. And that's why you got to understand like people, they're different. They're completely different. And the more you can understand, the better.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was looking as you were talking through that. It looks like this is a pretty popular book out there. He even has a website, principles.com. So it seems like he does a number of talks on how the economic machine works, principles for success. He did a TED talk. Have you listened to those?
Probably not. I've seen some of it. I know his book, you can actually get an app and get it for free. If you buy the book, it literally looks like a Bible. It's a big book. But I recommend it. I think it's a good read. And like I said, it's a good one for somebody like a young professional, like right at undergrad. It sort of gets them thinking about some good things early.
And was this something that you had to put into context for your kids, or were you just taking the principles literally? Like, are we using stories that would resonate with them based on what you were reading?
I was reading this to put them to sleep very quickly.
4-year-old basically is what I'm asking you.
What's that?
I said, were you reading this book that's as big as a Bible to your 4-year-old at night and put them to sleep?
Yeah. You know, the two, at the time the two were together, the middle one, I think he was 5. So it was 5 and 7. So I'd read it to those two and it would put them to sleep pretty quick. But it was good too, because they'd read it and I'd follow up like, hey, do you understand it? Can you explain it back to me? And they got like maybe a little bit of it, like 10-20% of it. And then I'd open it up to a conversation to really help them understand it. So it's like you're not going to read the book. You sort of read, they're really small little chapters. So you read a little piece and then just use it to open up a little bit of a conversation.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely put that as one of the descriptions and recommendations to go out and check out. So I think we're almost done with the rapid questions. I know that they weren't really as rapid as we said they were, but you were saying so much interesting things. So hopefully you're still with us. All right, Kisan. So again, thanks for sticking with us through this. You know, we've learned a lot already, and this has been a great discussion. Now let's get a little bit deeper. We've gotten a chance to talk a little bit about your memories and your philosophies, even your favorite superhero. But, you know, would love to understand, you know, what does being a dad mean to you, and how has it changed your life perspectives from before you were a parent?
Yeah, it does change a lot. I think I didn't know what I was getting into in terms of what it entails, because if you think about your responsibilities as a parent, in the most fundamental view, it's to feed your kids healthy and educate them. So at the end of the day, like, I always come back to those two things. Are we feeding them healthy, and are we educating them? So I think that's the most important thing, is to really be proactive and keep them obviously keep them in good health and entertain, but like, make sure you're constantly trying to educate them and better them that way.
It sounds like you didn't know what you're getting yourself into, but you've done it 3 times, so you must have enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, the first one was a good challenge. I like it. I think, like I said, it is a challenge. I think the things evolve too when you do have kids and you don't realize it, because when they're really small, they're really cute, and you play with them like they're babies, and it's nice to have babies around the house. But it changes when they grow up, because that time when I'd come home and I have they're rugrats, you know, I just sit in the floor and play with them and let them just pomple on top of me and you know, just have fun that way. That quickly evolves and changes, because they grow up, they have their own hobbies and interest, and that time with the three together doesn't really count as much in a sense. It's more about the individual time that you provide for each one. So I think that's probably, as things evolve, like, made it the biggest challenge, is the fact that you now like really have to dedicate time for each child individually and pretty much individualize that experience. Cause it's my daughter. I need to get on the ice and put on a helmet and do some stick and puck with her. If it's my son, he's more of like the STEM projects and things like that. So we might build Lego sets together. And if it's a 4-year-old, he likes causing trouble. So we might end up with some water guns and causing some trouble.
Do you try to set aside like scheduled time with each one of the kids to make sure you're trying to kind of distribute that evenly? Or do you just kind of just roll with the punches and however time allows?
I think it's a blend. I wish we were a little more structured. I think it's a big thing I've been trying to push in our household. The challenge is when you get to the weekend and there's always the set activities there. So if they're in classes and things like that, so that helps at least give you some basis to guide off of. But then after that, you might have like half a day still open and it's like, okay, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to go to the zoo? Do you want to go, trying to come up with the activity. And there's some people that are good at it where they plan things week ahead, and I'm not one of them. I think that's where I'm trying to get to a point where I can introduce some of these project management things I teach and talk about in my work environment and bring it at home, where here's our list of things to do. And I want your ideas. I want you to contribute to it. What we're going to do is we're going to prioritize it. And then the upcoming weekend, we're going to start doing one or two of the top things on the list. And then we'll keep going down for the next weekend. So that way we always have a planned list of things to do ahead of time.
And Kisan, you know, it's an interesting point because, you know, I know you're also running a company of what I think the last time you and I spoke, it was 40 or 50 people. And so, you know, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about mergers and acquisitions and, you know, the culture and kind of communication. And so you just mentioned on a smaller scale, although much more personal, you know, being able to spend individual time with each kid is definitely the best and optimal, but often with the time you try to bundle it all into one family activity. What parallels have you taken from that type of experience where you know you need to get the one-on-one attention, but, you know, obviously the most efficient part way is family, to managing 40 people that probably all do want your singular attention as well. But, you know, obviously there's, you know, so much time in a day, so you can only give yourself out to so many people, and you have to also make sure that the work gets done.
So between balancing the two?
Yeah. How would you actually balance, like, what have you learned from like managing, you know, three kids that all want your singular attention to managing 40 people that all want your singular attention? Have you taken anything from being a father with three kids and applied those principles to how you manage people?
Yeah, it might be a little bit more the other way around. So it's a mix between the two. When we talk about here's things we do together as a team, family, and things we do individually together and putting that time. So I think there has to be a balance between it. And even in the business wise, I learned that where I want to make sure there's good communication. We'll do these very short, frequent status meetings, and it just helps everybody sync up, everybody explains in a minute or two what they're doing, what they're working on, and we get on the same page about it. And then we'll go off and do our stuff. But at the same time, when we do those things, we'll identify like, oh, here's an issue. We should get together about that and talk about it. And we know where we need to have like our one-on-one meetings or with a small group. And then I think beyond that, like even right now with everything going on and the downturn, it's really important just to grab one-on-one calls and just do a health check. For me, just to, hey, I don't have any agenda, but I just want to see how things are going for you. I just joke and call it like a mental health check, but I think it's just spending the time to listen. It's really important. You can learn a lot and probably see some of the underlying issues that you may not realize. And it's similar with family too. I once did this with my daughter where it was a Friday and I did an exit interview for somebody I really actually liked working with. And that's something I try to do is if you any chance do an exit interview and try to, people are more open to telling you some unfiltered feedback if you really push them to. So it's good to do that. And I did that, you know, how can I improve as a leader, the work environment and so forth. And I did it with my daughter. I said, hey, how am I doing as a dad? Like what's good and where do you think I can improve? And it was interesting because the things that she told me that I was doing good were the things I thought she would say that I was doing bad, that, hey, you know, you have this level of discipline. You're always, you know, pushing us and teaching us stuff and this and that. But even like that kind of approach of just really trying to push them towards goals and things like that, that they valued and thought it was a good thing. And then when it came to the bad, she told me I needed to be easier on her younger brother, not the youngest, but the middle child. So he's like, he's sensitive. You got to be easier on him. So I said, okay, that's a good fair point taken. So I think that's it's a mix, you know, when you can sort of broadly talk and just like a work environment. I've done like these periodic family meetings or they're real short, but I just like, hey, let's get some ideas together. Let's talk. We're gonna be cooped up in the house for a while. What can we do to make things better around here? Make it more comfortable, make us live better together and get along better. And just, you know, let the kids contribute and put their ideas out there and see what they come up with. And it's funny, you know, obviously my young one's going to ask for more toys and candy. And then you just see what ideas they come up with. But then, and then at the same time is like, you got to balance it out with some of that one-on-one attention too. So if they have certain things and my middle child likes Legos, I'll come home and get a Lego set and just spend some time with them to help them put it together. I think it's just mixing the two together, but making sure along the way that everybody's really comfortable to express themselves and you're listening. I think that works parallel between the work environment and then your family with the kids.
Keyson, I'm interested to see how that tactic plays out with you asking your kid for some feedback. Is if they will mature and be able to accept constructive criticism better based on seeing you take that from them. So I'm interested to see how that plays out over the long term.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think getting into a leadership role was a big challenge for me early on, especially when I moved into tech and it was, you got to be more serious about it versus running like a small retail store. And that was the big thing I learned, is let people take punches at you. You know, it lets you confront the things that you don't want to confront about yourself. So we have this inherent nature to think about ourselves in the most beauty and light and colorful way. That's not always true. You want to find out what are the things that are areas that you can improve and get better at. So getting people comfortable to give you that criticism, it's effort of its own, but it's the most valuable thing you could do to better yourself. So it's interesting because it does apply with kids too, and they're more open to tell you what they don't like about you.
Yeah, man, we have this culture now of like everything has to be nice and complimentary. And I don't know if that's the most beneficial way to communicate all the time. You know, one of the activities we're trying to do, and sometimes it's just a wording, right? Like a word like constructive criticism, I think has gotten such a negative connotation over the years. We're trying to turn that into what we call like sparring or training or practicing. And that gives an environment, almost sets up like a platform so that you feel more comfortable to share and be open and give points of feedback. You know, I find that I'm constantly having to ask for that, or else you just hear kind of the overall, yeah, no, everything's great. And, you know, I complain about my boss. I complain about my, you know, friends, you know, we all complain. Right. And so, you know, it's impossible for anybody to not have some type of kind of recommendation. And even if it's something that you don't take, or you may not be able to get to at that point, getting people to have that trust and really be able to be honest with each other is critical. And even better if you can get your family to have a discussion. And like you said, it's not always on the surface. You have to dig a little bit. So Keyson, going on, you know, looking at what you've done, you know, and how you've managed that and really going out and getting feedback, you know, do you see parallels between raising kids and being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, definitely. Like some of the examples I just cited in terms of like thinking about managing a team and that sort of leadership approach in the business environment, a lot of that sort of parallels over to the family with the kids. But you got to be careful. You don't want to make them feel like they're employees versus your kids. So, and then I think some of the structure things too, like for us, we always have goals in our business and we review them every quarter and we discuss the progress from the previous quarter and what we're going to achieve the next quarter. I don't run my household on quarters, but I do encourage my kid, and my daughter's probably at that stage where I can have her write down goals. You know, I had her do this. I have a picture of it somewhere, but she had a cute little thing she wrote, and it was her goals in life were to be the best hockey player, get into Harvard, and get rich. So, you know, and then from there, it's like, okay, what do you need to do to achieve that goal? Like to be the best hockey player, that takes a lot of work. I mean, and I started talking to her about Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, the 10,000 hour rule. You know, that's a lot. That's like 3 hours of practice every day for consistently to get to that, whatever, 10 years so you can play at like a collegiate level. But so then things like that, where you start getting them to think about what they need to do to be able to achieve those goals and start emphasizing on why it's important that they have that daily ritual or practice to be able to do it, to achieve it. So that's kind of one where, like I said, I think my kids are a little bit early for that, but I'm starting to introduce it with my daughter. I think the other ones are still a little bit young for it. But that's probably one of the big things that I really want to drive at, is just making sure that there's clear goals and having that understanding of what needs to get done to make sure that goal happens and break things down so they're little achievable milestones to get there.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, man. You know, we wrote a blog a few months ago around the key principle that gets lost. You know, there's always this STEM focus, and then there's all kinds of other things, you know, how to be polite, how to communicate. But one of the areas that you never really see a whole lot, and we call it reverse engineering, you know, being able to take a goal and break it apart and really put it into chunks and actually execute on it. I see it all the time in business. You know, everybody, you know, not everybody, but you have people come out and say, okay, I'm going to do this. And then you just never see that goal actually achieved. And I think that the minute people start to go down, they may not have planned or never not broken up and really understood what they were intending to achieve. And so being able to break those up. And then one of the areas that we're trying to focus on in my house with Milan is when you don't reach a goal, like, you know, what do you do? Like, it's not that you just give up and say, I just was not good enough. It's, you know, assess the situation. Was it something that was a priority? You know, should you have done differently? And really not just stop at that milestone, but also like learn how to build off of your failures as much as your successes.
Very good point. Hey, you know what? I'm going to try some fun real quick. You guys mind for a second?
No.
All right. I'm going to see if I can call my kid. Hey, Shyla.
Yeah?
You're live right now on my friend's podcast with Jonathan and Dustin. And yeah, it's about being a dad. And I wanted to just ask you, because we always talk about this, but I wanted you to share with them what your purpose in life is.
Find what you love to do and be the best in the world at it.
How do you do that?
Focus and work 10 times harder than everybody else.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Shiloh.
Hey, is there any advice that you would give to dads to just be good dads out there and, you know, do a great job?
Yeah. Don't always be nice. You can sometimes be strict. Don't always like let your kids go crazy. You sometimes need a schedule to follow so they know what to do and in action.
That's pretty good. Anything else?
Switch to guests here. You've been great, but I feel like this is the podcast right here.
Yeah, right. You guys have any questions for Shiloh?
Shiloh, how's your dad doing? Is he doing well?
Yeah.
What are you doing during these times? Are you doing okay with the coronavirus?
Yeah, but it's kind of boring staying home.
But you probably get to spend a lot of time with your family, right?
Yeah.
And how's school going?
It's good. Well, I don't know when we have school again, but we have video calls instead.
Here's the biggest question. We're all trying to figure out how to be the best dads we can be. So what makes the best dad?
Maybe you could teach them life lessons, and you could also...
It's a tough one.
It's a tough question. Should we spend more time with our kids?
Yeah.
And watch more shows or no less TV?
Less TV.
Less TV. Wow, Kisan, you're doing a great job. I think you're kind of one-upping all of us here.
Well, what are we going to do if we're not going to watch TV?
You could do some work and teach them life lessons like my dad does.
What's like the most important life lesson I've taught you?
Open-minded and closed-minded and thank you and sorry.
You like those two?
Yeah.
This might need to be our new podcast format.
Shiloh, you're the best part of this podcast.
Wait. Great
insights.
Can you want to explain to the guys how thank you and sorry works?
Yeah. So you can't just say thank you and sorry without meaning. You need to have a meaning. Like you stole someone's umbrella. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, you should say, I'm sorry that I stole your umbrella. You need a reason why you stole or you're thankful for something.
Oh, so if we were going to say thank you for being on our podcast today, then we would have to thank you for being on our podcast and sharing so many great ideas and giving us a lot of valuable life lessons in order for us to spread with our audience. Is that how we would have to say thank you?
Yes.
You're a great teacher.
Awesome.
And what's your favorite activity to do with your dad?
Science. He orders a bunch of science kits and Legos we could do.
That's great. And you know, your dad's saying wonderful things about you. We're excited to have him on this show. He's an incredible person. I've gotten a chance to know him more over the last couple of months. And so he's very proud of you, and it sounds like he's doing a great job, and you sound like a fantastic kid. And so we're so happy to have you on our show. So thank you for coming on and sharing all your insights.
You're welcome.
Hey, thanks, Shyla. I'll see you a little later.
Okay. Bye, bye, Daddy.
Bye. Think of something fun for us to do.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, Shiloh. That was awesome, Keyson. Great idea.
How much did you pay to have that for you?
Yeah, where do we go with this on the podcast at this point? Like, I feel like
fingers crossed. Like, I hope she doesn't say anything out there.
She basically reiterated everything that you shared with us. And so you've clearly not only talked the talk, but you guys are walking the walk. And on top of that, you know, I love your radio voice, man, but she's got a much cuter voice than all of us, I think.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks for bringing her on. And you know, I know we've probably about an hour, 15 minutes and getting close to time, so don't want to keep you longer. But, you know, just to wrap up a couple more questions, you know, as far as, you know, I think we've hit some of the traditions. You know, you talked about doing a family sport and you know, obviously you've discussed the key principles. When you think about, at the end of the day, you know, what you want your kids to remember from their childhood and you as a father, when they describe you, what would that be?
You know, one of the most valuable things I learned from my dad was discipline, and learning that allowed me to push myself and to be able to achieve what I've been able to achieve across my career. So if the kids, you know, love it, hate it, I want them to at least remember me for being able to teach them that. And then too, just the other things are really spending the time to teach them things that they may not otherwise have learned from school, or may not have learned the right things from some of their friends, to at least kind of stick up and make sure they're have some sort of guiding principles that they can continue carry with them through life.
And when you say discipline, Keyson, like, I, you know, we talk about discipline. I use that word all the time. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, what does a discipline, when you get to a tactical level, our listeners out there, you know, what kind of things can they do to actually execute on a disciplined type mentality?
Yeah, for me, it's just when you get set on doing something, you get it done no matter what. I mean, that's just it. You do it. You don't just have these wavy dreams and they never come to fruition. But that's that whole idea of, here's a goal. How are we going to get there? We're going to make sure we get there. There's no reason not to. You know, I sort of last Friday had an idea about doing an online conference on a whim. Monday, at least convinced myself over the weekend to do it. And now this weekend, it's all stuff we're putting in action and getting prepared for. And it's just, that's that level of discipline where this idea turns into a goal, and then we're going to do everything that needs to get done to make sure that happens and it's achieved and successful. And that takes a level of discipline, because some people, they don't have it and they're going to get distracted. They procrastinate and things like that. But it's more of that, no, get things done.
And how do you prioritize? Because there's always more things to get done than there are hours in a day. And I know you have the deal room, you have M&A science, you know, you're being asked to speak at conferences, you've got employees that want to talk to you, you've got partners, you know, you and I have spent a lot of time chatting. You've got, you know, your kids, your family, like, you know, how do you prioritize and stay disciplined to what you really believe needs to get done, gets done?
That's something I've not mastered. I think that's probably one of the difficult things to do. And I'm always curious about whether there are better ways to do it. One of the things, my attempts of doing it, and even coming into to my office today to work on some of this stuff, but it's just having this list that's always in order of priority. So, you know, and it gets mixed up pretty quick, but, and you go through and sort of clean it up and reset it. But my daily list of things to do is always in order of priority. So the most important things first, and then it goes down. So that way you're getting, even at the very least, if I only get one or two things done, I've got one or two really important things done and I can feel accomplished and achieved for the day. I think that's one of the important things, is just to sort of continuously and consistently sort of recheck where you're at, but try to have that single list of these are the things I personally need to get done in the order of priority.
Yeah, you know, the prioritization. I know, Dustin, you've got your hands full with prioritization. You have a teenager, a baby, a work, you know, we've got the dad corp and family. You know, we're all balancing. One of the things, Kisan, I've been absolutely impressed and I admire from just our you know, recent friendship and working together on other initiatives is your responsiveness and just execution ability. You know, I think that when I think about words like integrity, you know, every time you've said something, you've done it and you do it at a speed and with responsiveness that it's just kind of incredible. And that's something I admire. And I'm actually trying to continue to implement into my own toolkit. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun watching and working with you and hearing you on this stuff. But, you know, I think when you think about discipline, like that kind of staying focused, that responsiveness ties into that so much. And that's something I've noticed is like kind of a key characteristic of your brand in my eyes is like, you're just a very responsive and have an execution ability that is pretty, pretty unparalleled.
At times you caught me at a good time. It doesn't always happen that good.
Yeah. Well, hey, I don't have any more questions. But Dustin, is there anything that you want to cover that we haven't had a chance to hear from Kisan today?
No, I don't want to take any more of Kisan's time today. I know from me personally, I appreciate you taking the hour, 20 minutes plus to talk through kind of your family, life, work balance and kind of sharing your background, your kind of your values and some of your vulnerable moments and your most proud moments. I just personally appreciate you taking the time to talk that through. And I think we've got a couple really solid tactics and lessons just from talking to you that I think we'll be able to take ourselves and also be able to share that with the rest of the Dad Corp community that is going to be listening to the podcast. So I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for letting my daughter and I guest on your podcast. I had a lot of fun and really appreciate it. And I'm sure she did too.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out a time to have her back on. That would be great to have her on as a full guest at some point.
You could.
Maybe we'll have the kids version and the kids can hold the podcast and the dads will play date. So before we wrap up, why don't you share where people can learn more about you, your business? You know, I know you have so many things going on. You've recently wrote a book. And so where can we find you?
Probably on LinkedIn. If you want to find me, it's just Kisan, K-I-S-O-N, Patel, P-A-T-L on LinkedIn. And I'm usually on there. I do a podcast myself called M&A Science, which is on most of the platforms. And I don't know, we're at an interesting time right now. I think there's a lot of people that are really shifted in their daily lives. And there's a lot of people that are struggling or going to be struggling. So if anybody's listening to it, I just encourage you to you know, be aware and spend a little bit of time finding ways you can give, whether it's just donating to local food bank or something of that sort. But there's a lot of people in need. So spend a little time and maybe even get the kids involved with that as well.
Yeah. And I know your book, if there's any M&A professionals out there, anybody in the mergers and acquisitions world like ourselves, Kisan and myself, you definitely have a great book on agile M&A. And is it your website where they could pick up a copy of that if they were interested in reading some of the business work that you've done along the way?
You know, it is on Amazon, the printed version. It's called Agile M&A, but we're getting ready on agilema.com to just put all the content up there for free. We're getting updates because the idea is to create a bunch of best practices around mergers and acquisitions. So I'm bringing in other practitioners to continue expanding on that content. So we're going to just put it all available free online and just allow people to keep contributing and adding more of these lessons, similar dad lessons, but M&A lessons.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be sharing. We have a wide audience. We have almost 3,000 contacts on LinkedIn, a lot of them in New York City. So I think there's a decent amount of private equity and investment bankers out there. So we'll keep sharing the word on your M&A. But you know, as far as just being a great father, a great friend, and just overall a great guest, thanks so much. Give Shiloh a hug for us. She was awesome. Made the podcast, and we'll look forward to having you back on again at another time.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the time and the opportunity today.
All right. Awesome. Take care, Keystone.
Take care. Yep. Thank you.
Have a great one. See you.
We have a ton going on here at the Dad Corp. So thanks for following us. Jump on the platform and join in the show. Check out our website, www.thedadcorp.com. The design, it's great. It's simple. It's intuitive. We have an entire e-commerce dad mall. We're adding partners, new products regularly. We are going to be the biggest, baddest, and best platform globally for everything dads. While you're there, pick up one of our hot selling Dad Life t-shirts. This thing is going off the virtual shelves. We're getting hundreds of orders coming in. It's a great price. It's one of our original Dad Corp designs. We went out, we crowdsourced, we went through a long process. We got a great design. It's unique. Kids love it. Dads love it. People are going to notice it. Our shirts are comfortable. Our customer service is even better. Check us out. Pick one up. Spread the word. Follow us on Facebook. We have over 80,000 followers. You can find us on facebook.com/thedadcorp. If you don't have Facebook and you're into the Instagram, check us out, the_dad_corp. Subscribe to our podcast. We're going to be continuing these regular interviews with dads out there who are living an epic dad life. They're going to share their stories, advice, lessons, and we're just going to have great conversations. Very interesting people, very interesting conversations. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. If you listen to podcasts on some type of app, we're probably there. Check us out. If not, go to another one. Subscribe, share. Thank you. We love you. We can't do it without you. So finally, you know, keep spreading the word. We're out there, we're all in, and we want to do this with you all. We're a dad site built for dads by a couple dads.